welcome back. This is Steve Cadley, your host with Atlanta Sales Talk Radio. And we have a very exciting show for you today. And it's actually kind of new because we have my co-host today, Andy Lowe, is also producing the show. So if things go really kind of haywire and we go silently all of a sudden, you know what happened.
And then I get to be the blame guy.
That's right.
All right. No, that's only if the sound is bad. If the show goes bad, that's your fault.
Well, it's sort of like when I go to a bar and I have too many drinks, it's the bartender's fault. I was overserved.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And then in the background, we cannot go on without mentioning the fact that floating around the background is Stone Payton, who wonderfully is not Mike today. So we're probably sure we won't hear from him.
Then we should definitely talk about him today.
Absolutely. All right. So it's fun. When he's in the room, we can talk about him. So anyway, very exciting show. Atlanta Sales Talk Radio, we are going and talking about sales. We have a special guest today. We have Elizabeth Halkos, Chief Marketing Officer with Purchasing Power. And we are going to hear about an organization, actually one of the 50 fastest growing private companies here in Atlanta. And it's one of the best opportunities and one of the best organizations, I think, that you've probably never heard of. So we're hoping to change that today on Atlanta Sales Talk Radio. So welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me, Steve. Well, it's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. So one of the things that I was really intrigued with Purchasing Power, because, you know, tracking and looking at Purchasing Power, if you go and you Google it, you start to see all of the challenges that are going on in Europe right now. It's a Purchasing Power. They're trying to think about how they can bundle things together. The name Purchasing Power, how did that come to be?
Actually, when you think about it, now that you mention it, we actually had a couple of different names when we started as a company, something along the lines of an employee computer purchase program. The concept of Purchasing Power seemed to make sense more, seeing what we do as a benefit that's offered into employer groups. For those individuals listening who don't know what we do,
yes,
we're essentially an e-retailer that is sold as a benefit into employers. Employees can come in and purchase products such as computers, home and appliances, electronics, over payroll deduction. Employers see it as a benefit that helps engage employees and support retention. And the concept of Purchasing Power is what we feel we provide to those employees that are participating in the program.
Hence the name, Purchasing Power.
Hence the name, exactly.
And so, because you mentioned a keyword, I think, is really employee benefits. So it's a lot of, you can go on a purchase, and it's a benefit to the employee. How does that work?
So if I'm a participating employee, I would come to a website where, or I can use our call center where I would find products that I could find, let's say, in a Best Buy, mm-hmm, and make that purchase. Let's say I'm looking for a washer and dryer combo, and it costs, let's say, $1,000. And that payment amount is split up over the pay cycle that I have with my employer and paid off over a 52-week period. Not only does it give me the access to the products that I want in real time, but for the employee base that we serve, it, mm-hmm, it serves as a budgeting tool, something that is convenient for them, the use of payroll deduction, but it offers me an ability to pay for something over time, over
that
12-month period.
Interesting. So basically, so then you have a situation where I could get it right now if I need it.
Exactly.
And so who are some of the clients that you would work with in regards, because I see this as a real big benefit.
Absolutely. Tyson is an example, is a client of ours here in Atlanta, Newell Rubbermaid, Wellstar, Delta. We have several state accounts, such as the state of California, Arizona, mm-hmm, the North Carolina Employee Association. We serve a variety of industries, healthcare, consumer products, manufacturing, retail, state and local government. And employers today, especially given the economic uncertainty that we've seen over the last few years, are looking for ways to engage their employee base without necessarily incurring costs. And one of the benefits for the employer is that it doesn't cost anything to offer our benefit to their employees.
Right.
And they are looking for ways to, they've got a segment, various segments of employees today that, mm-hmm, range from your baby boomers to your millennials to your Gen Xers. And the big change in, from a benefits perspective is that there used to be just kind of a one-size-fits-all approach to offering benefits to employees. Today, that strategy does not work as well. You've got various segments in the workforce, and that's why a benefit like purchasing power is brought in by these employer groups to help serve those segments.
Interesting. And serving the segments, I can imagine that, and reading the blog on purchasing power, which I think is very robust, by the way, and a lot of really good thought and leadership there is, hint, hint, that's purchasingpower.com. You can find the blog. It's a great, great source of information. But one of the things I was intrigued with is there's a couple stories of actually people, and I hadn't thought about this, where the purchasing power is identified as a lifesaver for them in a lot of ways because they were able to purchase a stove just before Thanksgiving because their old one died and they had no, they might have been credit challenged, shall we say.
Exactly. It is estimated that about 50% of Americans are in a situation where they do not have the $1,000 to $2,000 in cash to purchase needed items around the house, mm-hmm. washers, dryers, computers.
50%, really?
So you, wow. you've got in a lot of these individuals are hardworking Americans that are going to work every day, and they just are having a, you know, they're in a position where they're looking for ways to budget for these types of purchases. A lot of times, various life situations, it could be a divorce, it could be a new child in the family, put families in positions where they are needing to budget for such of these items, furniture, washers, dryers, televisions. It runs the gamut. Our product expand from computers, electronics, appliances, furniture, and within those categories, what you typically see in a Best Buy or some of these major furniture outlets online.
Interesting. It's almost like a Sears where you can get pretty much a little bit of everything.
Exactly.
Wow. And so that makes sense. And then they have a situation where they can actually get it. They, because they're not budgeted, like you said, the 50% of that population, and then they can get access to those amenities of life, if you will.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, as you mentioned, these individuals that are using the program love the program. The stories that we hear really inspire us, you know, as a business to continue to provide an excellent program, because when you see when you hear and read these stories, mm-hmm. They truly are inspiring and inspirational to motivate us to continue to do what we do, mm-hmm. and to expand our program into other employer groups.
Wow. I could see how they could almost become evangelists for purchasing power.
Absolutely.
And that's one level of the customer. And I could see, now, if I'm an employer now and I'm looking at this opportunity or looking at purchasing power as part of the benefits package, one of the challenges that I'm thinking about is having some orientation around HR. I'm looking to enhance something or enhance the benefits package that would help employee retention,
exactly.
employee morale.
Exactly.
Is this having an impact?
That is what the feedback that we get from our clients is. Wonderful. That it absolutely does. You can see it at benefit fairs.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about most benefits, it's kind of an oxymoron. Most benefits are actually designed to protect you when a bad thing happens sometime in your life. It's not something you can actually benefit from today.
That's true. I think about insurance, medical
exactly.
benefits. Think about that.
Life insurance, disability.
It's not fun stuff.
Not fun stuff. And our program is a real-time benefit, something that you get to take advantage of today. And you see it. You know, these employees, you talk about engagement. We get feedback from those participating members. So we do get the feedback on drives engagement, supports retention, as well as helps support the reducing financial stress on the workforce. And there's all sorts of studies out there, and I know we've done some writing as well, just mm-hmm. white papers yes, and whatnot, on how programs like ours can help support, create that financial stability. And without it, it actually impacts employee productivity. So it's another intangible benefit for that employer.
Ooh, the power there to make it tangible, right?
Exactly.
Atlanta Sales Talk Radio.
Oh, sure.
We want to talk about how we can use that to sell more.
I would, yes. It's something we've been discussing. I've wanted us to be able to, you know, quantify, and we're working on it. A calculator of sorts that can help employers do that.
Outstanding. Yeah, because I think, from my perspective, an ROI calculator or something
exactly.
of that nature, even if I make some assumptions that a CFO or a chief operating officer or the chief human resource officer say, well, I don't buy into your assumptions. All right, so I have, instead of having a 1,500% return on investment, I only have a 200% 8% return on investment, I'm still ahead of the curve, right? I mean, and particularly because your program's free for the most part.
Exactly.
To the employer.
The employer is only requirement that we have is that they support the administration of the program. And we try and make it as easy as possible for them, you know, and that is, you know, no cost, no liability. We do the communication around the program to employees, and we just ask that they support the administration. For our clients, it's typically 2 hours a month, so something that's manageable.
Interesting. So I'm just going, and I'm struck by this. And Andy, as you chime in, because I know Mr. Iron Man over here, Mr. Athlete, and I'm thinking, you know, wellness and health and so on. But I'm thinking, as you've worked with organizations, and I know Stone has also, in your background, and it's great, I can talk to Stone and he can't say anything. but the idea is, I think this is a no-brainer in being able to help an employee retention and employee engagement. And that's going to one of the things I know you talk about is engagement, right? And activation. So,
yeah, no doubt. And employee morale is a huge thing right now. I mean, how do you keep people motivated when things economically are not in such a great place? And I think it's wonderful that you have a program like that. Now, looking at it from a different angle, though, I'm sitting over here with a question in my mind, and I'm thinking we're dealing with the American consumer. So how do you use a program like this effectively and combat the need versus greed that I think we probably see with a lot of consumers? I mean, you're telling great stories, and I'm inspired by the idea that somebody who's had a disaster, a new baby, a kitchen, something they need. But how do you keep somebody from taking advantage of this because they just want stuff?
Great question. You sound like a potential client.
That's a pretty good question. Yeah.
It is a great question. And this is one of the, I'd say, truly unique aspects of our company, in that if you think about the options out there, first, our business and what we do. One is it's a combination of retail benefit and a finance company, essentially. And I can explain how those three intertwine and how it becomes the offering to the employer. But secondly, you've got the employee, as you said, how do you prevent them from overextending themselves? Where the finance, or should I say credit mitigating elements of our business model come into play are that we actually have spending limits based off salary. And so we only put employees in a position where they can spend within their means. It is typically less than 6.5% of their salary. And going back to the point around the uniqueness of the company, is not a lot of companies are interested in helping employees be disciplined spenders. And we are intentionally doing that. We know that it's important for the employer, but it also really supports the value proposition of what we're offering to the employee. And it's not just about, I'm going to go buy what I want. It's about, I'm going to get what I need. It may also be what I want. But I'm doing it in a way that is budget friendly for me, based off my salary and the economic position of myself as an individual. And I just happen to be employed by my company. And that's, you know, something that I can take advantage of through them.
Yeah. I can see that. So, I mean, Andy, what do you think?
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, I love that you guys have somewhat of a limit on it so that people
absolutely.
Don't get themselves caught. Now, in that situation, because, again, I'm going back to the American consumer, we're given limits on our credit cards, for example, but yet we're prone to go out and max them out and get ourselves in trouble despite these limits. Again, do you guys offer any type of education ongoing to the employees with regard to how to keep from getting up against the wall, leaving yourself a little margin so that if those unexpected things do happen, you haven't maxed out your limit on want?
You're talking about through our program or just generally speaking? We don't find that, and it's may have something to do with when you look at those spending limits and the average purchase through an e-retailer is tends to be in the $200 to $300 range, that most of those employees are not actually hitting that credit limit through purchasing power. The concept of disciplined spending resonates with them. And so they are aware of that spending limit, but most of them are not actually hitting the limit using our program. As far as when you talk about credit cards and maxing out spending limits on a credit card, I think the difference is there isn't an association with the employer, and there are, you know, this is perceived as a benefit that's offered by the employer for these employees, and perhaps that association creates a little bit more discipline than what you would find kind of on your own, and your ability to even pay for that credit card. The average credit card is paid off in a 2 to 4 year period of time. So that concept of being able to pay it off in a certain amount of time relative to what an employee has to do through our program puts them in a situation of even being more disciplined than they would be if they were spending on their credit card.
Because I think you have it. Is it a 12-month cycle? Is that?
It's 12 months. It's no greater than 12 months.
Wow. Well, that's great. Because 2 to 4 sounds pretty good for me. I mean, I think most people
it's a long
like,
period of time.
Most people are like 10 to 12, if
well,
ever.
Let's not even talk about student loans.
Right. Do you ever pay off a student loan?
Exactly.
No, actually. I think they're willed to the next generation.
That's what I was thinking.
Goes. Well, interesting. So you had mentioned early on around you're unique in not in so many different ways, but purchasing power is unique in a lot of ways around being able to manage to the different, the millennials, the Generation Xers.
Exactly.
What do you mean by that? Say a little more.
Well, if you think about a baby boomer may be more interested in, it could be long-term care, you know, relative to our program and the typical consumer it is attractive to, it's in the, let's say, 35 to 45-year-old segment of customers. It's this the concept of that one-size-fits-all benefits menu is going away, and what's replacing it is giving employees options depending upon where they are in their life. And if I am, you know, close to retirement, I am more likely to be interested in a benefit like long-term care or perhaps disability that is going to support where I am in my life and relative to an individual who needs a computer, has a family, and is in a position where they may be furnishing a home. And that's where a program like ours and others are being brought in to help serve some of these other segments of the population. This concept of simply having health care and life and disability is not going to be enough to attract and retain your employee base.
Got it. So basically you have another tool in your arsenal as an employer to be able to attract and retain some of the new and up-and-coming talent in the Generation Ys, Generation
Exactly.
X's, millennials.
Very exactly.
All right. So now we have an idea around purchasing power, and I know we'll come back and we'll reference that as we go on, but what have you learned? As this is, you've been around for a while. Purchasing power has been around arguably a short period of time, but you're really experiencing some phenomenal growth. I mean, to be identified by the Business Journal as one of the top 50 fastest-growing companies, private companies, that's something to be said, and you're leading this organization. What are some of the things, what has that experience been like for you?
It's been a lot of fun. And first and foremost, you should be having fun on your job, right?
Absolutely.
No matter what. And
except if you have to work with Stone.
Well, yes. Sometimes you have to work with people like Stone, and that's just a part of the job, right? It has been probably one of the biggest learning experiences has been that there is constant change in an organization. And there's a book out there called Bounce. It was written by Keith McFarland. And the book talks about leaders in an organization being able to absorb anxiety, and in particular when an organization is going through change. And I think as we've, you know, and I especially think over the last year, we, Purchasing Power, experienced another phenomenal year in 2011. The three prior years, as you noted, we've been identified as one of these top growing companies, and we were in the Inc. Fastest Growing Company list in 2008, 2009, 2010.
Wow.
We were acquired last year by Rockbridge Growth Equity based out of Detroit in 2011. And if for anyone who's gone through a process like that, it is certainly very time consuming. And at the same time, you're still expected to hit certain goals throughout that year. And one of the lessons, whether it be that particular experience or for me over the last 5 years with Purchasing Power, is the constant change and your need to be able to absorb the uncertainties around that change and how that impacts employees in your own organization, whether they work for you directly or are part of some other team.
Mm. So really, so as you go through this change, and because I know I can imagine new an acquisition or new ownership, so to speak, even if it's a board and they're kind of removed, it's going to be some level of anxiety throughout the whole organization. And so we were talking about
uncertainty, new change, new leadership. What are the goals going to be? And creating some, you know, that part of a leader's job is to, instead of contributing to that anxiety, is to absorb some of that and provide a sense of comfort, and also not just absorbing the anxiety, but whatever potential distraction is associated with that, as much as you can possibly deflect the individuals who are working with you for you from that, is going to help keep everyone focused on the goals at hand and minimize whatever kind of distraction that could be causing others in the organization.
So you're almost, you're absorbing and insulating then to a certain extent.
Absorbing and insulating. It's kind of like roof insulation.
That's the name, bounce. I like that, you know, because you're absorbing it and yeah.
Exactly.
Interesting. And so I could see that. And I look at the team, having gotten a chance to meet with some of the members, it's, it looks like you've assembled quite a team also.
Absolutely. It is, when I think about, you know, my peers as well as the individuals that work for me, not much differentiates an organization, but certainly the people and the culture do. Mm-hmm. And we are lucky to be in a position where we have both of those, you know, great people as well as a great culture to help us continue to support our momentum.
And one of the things that I have to just give a shout out, I was down there Friday in preparation for our meeting.
Yes.
I think the culture of Purchasing Power is really something to speak to, because it just, everyone's bonding together. They're doing things, whatever their title may be, they're going to do what it takes to get done. And then they also have fun, which I really liked. As I was walking into there, into your office, there was a flash hula hoop contest that happened. And
did you participate? Are you trying to become an employee at Purchasing Power?
I might. How's my pitch going so far?
It's going well.
I didn't participate in the hula hoops. However, if it's a...
That's a very difficult thing to do, by the way.
Yes. Yes. 50 pounds ago, I might have been able to do it, but that's an old...
Yeah, there's got
to
be some room for the hula hoop to move, or it's just...
Andy, you're not helping.
Stone's giving me cues over here. He's writing the jokes. I just read them.
Good. All right. So now... having been there and worked through this organization, change, manage it, you're absorbing a lot of that anxiety and insulating the team. And also, I think the team also, I can see them just aligning in a lot of ways with the culture. But how did you get here in regards to your background? Is, have you always been in this particular space? Or, because I think you have your MBA and some of your undergraduate work is...
Sure. My background spans a combination of marketing, sales, and account management. Prior to Purchasing Power, I worked at Earthlink and Monster, and got my undergrad at University of Virginia in Charlottesville and my master's in business from Emory University. And the combination of, in my role, I manage sales, marketing, and product, and my background serves that role very nicely, because it's certainly not functionally focused on one area or the other. And I do think there is a lot of benefits to having them combined under one, you know, central focus, central direction, because one of the certainly newer trends in sales is the dependency on marketing, and the role decision-making process that takes place in the sales funnel is a lot different than it used to be. And the combination of sales and marketing, and they're working towards those goals. And you always see the two on one side of the other coin. You know, it's sales' fault, it's marketing's fault. The two are critical in being able to support that decision-making
and
process.
And making that they play nice together effectively, right?
Exactly.
Because they're critical. And I think as I look at the business model of purchasing, you have a retail organization, which is a more of a business-to-consumer model.
Exactly.
And then you're selling to employers, which is more of a business-to-business.
Exactly. It's a benefit.
And then you have a relationship with brokers, agents, if you will, which is a alternate channel for going to market, too. So there's...
Exactly.
Wow, that's a wonderfully complex environment that we live in.
Exactly. It is, and it's one of the reasons why I like working at Purchasing Power, is because there are certainly, you know, elements of complexity that you don't typically find in other business models, whether it's pure direct consumer or only selling, you know, direct to a employer or sales channel without that additional channel that we have, which is the broker channel that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which adds to the wonderful challenges and opportunities, right? So I think about that. In regards to, as we think about purchasing power and your experience, and if I were somebody new coming into the organization, or coming into sales, or coming, say I wanted to grow up to be the Elizabeth Halko's Chief Marketing Officer, what kind of guidance might you give to that individual?
Wow, there's a lot of things I would tell them. You know, I've had some conversations with either potential new members to the team or certainly individuals who are looking for a certain career path. And one of the pieces of advice would be to not focus, on where you want to be, but make sure you're doing in your current role the best job that you can. Hmm. And the advice would be to, you should be excelling in your current role before you take on anything else. And if you're focused on doing that job very well, you know, that will be apparent and it will open up doors for you and put you in those positions versus, I especially think for younger generations, the focus is on, you know, I want to be the CEO of the company or how fast can I get from here to there? And it's interesting as you move along in your career, regardless of what your title is, every step in that process can be rewarding, mm-hmm. you know, and then when you are, let's say, in a position, a leadership position, there are times when you're going to think about, hey, when I was, let's say, in consumer marketing or and I was focused on email marketing or I was a regional sales manager, you're going to think about being in that role and there's parts of it you're going to miss because of where you are in your career. So probably the biggest piece of advice would be to focus on doing your job extremely well. And it will, if you're focused on that, it'll naturally lead to
other things,
the right opportunities. There are individuals who are never going to do that and they're going to find a company will pick them up, but those are not great employees. Mm-hmm. And the great employees will be focused on, as I what I just mentioned,
the job in front of them, so to speak.
Exactly, and so that first and foremost would be my advice to someone coming into the company. Mm-hmm. And the second would fit along the lines of what I had referenced earlier, which is to be there's an element of resilience in these excellent employees. You know, there's a person that can be very functionally competent.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this whole behavioral element of an individual in their role and their ability to tolerate and absorb and reflect the culture. And it's kind of like a matrix. So somebody could be functionally excellent, but can they be, you know, behaviorally excellent?
Can they fit in? Can they support it and work in
the
culture?
And it's the concept of emotional intelligence. And
yes.
So I think great leaders really can do both of those things. They have this functional excellence, but they also are able to have, if they don't have the emotional intelligence, certainly build upon it so that they put themselves in a position where they are also leading. And great leaders are going to be in a position where not only are they able to do the job, but they're able to exemplify the type of emotional intelligence that's a combination of integrity and some of the qualities around resilience, mm-hmm. The ability to create, you know, culture around them that will help an organization be excellent.
Wow, I like that. So the first one is really just to work hard, keep your eyes, you know, have a goal, but more importantly, get really good and be a top performer in what is your task at hand.
Exactly.
And then be functionally excellent, and then also have some level of emotional intelligence to be able to manage that space.
Exactly.
Like that. That's a crossroads. Interesting.
Exactly.
Well, that becomes a real character element, too, though, right? I mean, it's like they say, how you do anything is how you do everything. So, obviously.
Yeah, it's a lot. There's a lot of great, you know, articles. I read the Harvard Business Review mm-hmm. a lot, and there's some great content, and it's shaped into, you know, different articles, but they're all saying the same thing, which is how do employees, you know, there's the naysayers and there's those that are able to take that information but not focus on it. You know, they absorb it, they kind of dismiss it. And mm-hmm. as you progress in your career and you've managed enough people, you are very, it's very easy to figure out where certain individuals fix. You could almost pick people and put them out in that matrix that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And great companies do a very good job of retaining those top performers, but are also quick to identify that those that are kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of performance. And some of those aspects of an employee's performance is learned, you know, and it takes experience to go through that, whether it be the resilience or some of the more kind of emotional intelligent aspects mm-hmm. of someone's job. But they certainly are a little bit more intangible than, hey, I hit my goals this quarter.
It's not just a numbers thing. It's about
exactly
some of the intangibles. I like that. The emotional intelligence aspect of things, which is now with, you know, Daniel Goleman and his work, we're able to make that a little more tangible, right? So
exactly.
How would they do on their emotional IQ? Interesting. So, all right. So now I finish up as we're wrapping up. Anything that you'd like to share as we finish up? As I have one last question for you, and anything I'll ask from Stone, who's not Mike, so he can't really ask. But anything you might like to ask Andy?
Oh, you're pitching to me. I thought you were going for her first. I'm sitting over here.
Oh, so if there's anything else, I just
I'm letting the
sure
ladies go first. I was waiting.
All right, good. Well, that's good. I think this, I've enjoyed your time, but I have one last question.
Sure, I'd love to. I will, you know, potentially feed off your last question.
Well, the idea is there's two things. Ideas. I think it's exciting to hear purchasing power, and what I'd like to do is offer the chance to come back and share with a delighted customer, because I think there's some real, real tangible, real good story here, and from that particular perspective. But I also like to hear because you're talking to consumers, purchasing power is, and you're also working with employers, businesses. What are you seeing in the economy these days? Are we starting to see it improve based on what, you know, taking all of the numbers from Gallup and everything else that's coming out there? What are you seeing? What's from your perspective?
It's hard to answer that question because we've had such phenomenal growth over the last 3 to 4 years. But certainly in 2008, when there was, you know, the financial crisis began in really the crux of it was September. What we saw the aftermath of that was employers either laying off employees or refocusing on elements of their business other than benefits. So there certainly was a year where the sales process was lengthened for us over that period of time. And it speaks to what I'd mentioned earlier around the sales process becoming a little bit more complex. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen the effect the economy has had over the last 3 years on the sales process is that it has become more complex. There may be more decision makers, influencers in that process. The information gathering process, whether it be that because the decision maker is more risk averse as mm-hmm. a result of the economy, or because there's just more information out there as a result of the internet, there's so much more information at the front end of that decision-making process, but the time they actually are talking to somebody on your sales team, they have a pretty good idea as to what, if they want to actually use your program or your service, and when, you know, when, and it's how are you going to then adjust that conversation with your sales team based off of that changing sales process, which has really, we've seen a big change in the last, you know, 3 to 4 years as a result of the economy. You know, you hear, certainly, we've seen in 2011, even though certainly the U.S. and global economy has not seen the impact of this, we certainly have seen less layoffs, you know, an impact to turnover in 2011. You know, I think one of the biggest issues has really been around finding sources of consumer demand. You know, how, so you have as a, you know, if you look at the economy, how do you create consumer demand when you have, and you talk about the portion of that population can actually use a credit card or may not be able to buy a home.
Or so might be maxed out. Yeah.
So you have, you know, if I'm a company and I'm trying to sell my products, I'm either selling more to the same customer, you know, getting you to buy something new, buy more of the same thing, mm-hmm. or I'm finding a new customer. And, you know, on top of that, trying to find that consumer demand is the regulations just around the consumer's ability to use credit.
Got
so
it.
You could have a great credit score, but your ability to find and use that, you know, an example of that is mortgages for someone with a good credit, and some of the risk around that has become constrained.
Right, absolutely.
So I think that there's, you know, we've seen the impact of it, but I think it really comes down to finding, identifying consumer demand, and then having a little bit more. It almost is as if seems as if we've gone from not having maybe some regulation to maybe a little bit of too much regulation on, mm-hmm. which is going to limit some of the opportunity around creating consumer demand.
Interesting. And so you actually filled that niche and being able to, as an alternative.
Absolutely.
That's a really
absolutely.
Interesting one, huh?
And I think we will, regardless of what happens, we're going to continue to do that for our consumers. But I think the crux of the issue, whether it's on the housing side or if it's, you know, any company that's selling into a consumer base, it's around creating consumer demand and having companies having more confidence about being able to do that.
Interesting. So as I start to think about that, is the economy as rough as it's been the last couple of years, has that actually enhanced the opportunity for purchasing power because we're an alternative form of lending, if you will.
Absolutely.
But there's a whole bunch of other benefits now that you're starting to see, which is employee retention, employee morale, which is then impacting productivity. So even if consumer options expand, we're seeing the benefits as employers. You're going to start to see the benefits of, hey, it's not just another alternative form of credit or another form of financing. It's a whole bunch of other things.
Exactly. And I'd say that would be, you know, one of the last pieces of information I'd want to share is that sometimes employers who hear about the program, they may be thinking, well, I've got something like this, or I'm not as interested in, you know, the vision that we have is that this type of platform and the process that we're providing for employees is something that could be used for other products. So whether it's education or travel or auto and home repair. And so it's really the concept of providing a convenience for employees, whether they're looking to support some certification or training in the workforce, or it's needing to get a car fixed. And if it's taking a trip, you know, we're looking at some of these other new opportunities. That's the same concept of what we do today, but extending it to an entirely different type of product that's unlike what we're doing in 2011 or 2012.
And maybe appealing to different demographics within the employee base.
And the employee base as well as employers.
Employers. Interesting. Well, this has been phenomenal. I've learned a whole bunch more about purchasing power, and I'm intrigued in having you come back with a delighted customer.
Looking forward to it.
And have some more perspectives. I think this is a really robust story, and I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about purchasing power. So
I'm looking forward to it, too. And for those listening, check out purchasingpower.com for more information.
Absolutely. And how else will they? Purchasingpower.com. And I think is that also where they can find the blog?
The blog is on purchasingpower.com.
Purchasingpower.com also. Great. Well, wonderful. And you'll be able to have all the information up on the site. So I appreciate your time, Elizabeth. And any last comments? Stone? Oh, I'm sorry. You're not a mic. Andy, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by some of the stuff you had to say around culture. And I hope, whether it's on another show where we have the client in or not, I hope we get to go a little deeper with that because I think it's a critical element. And I just loved what you had to say.
Sure.
I feel like I want to put in an application for Purchasing Power and go to work there myself. It sounds like a wonderful place.
Thank you.
You're my host. You can't. And producer now. So, all right. With that, Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Thank you both. I appreciate it.
It was wonderful having you on the show. And As we sign off, this is Steve Cadley from Atlanta Sales Talk Radio and reminding you that everyone is in sales. So, happy selling. Until next time we meet.